Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Democrats are continuing to criticize the so-called Big Beautiful Bill that slashes social services and extends tax cuts passed during President Trump's first term. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Maintaining that the GOP's domestic package will have ugly consequences for New Yorkers, the state's Democrats are continuing to voice sharp criticisms. On a Thursday Zoom call with reporters, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer criticized the bill for its severe cuts to clean energy incentives, which he says could eliminate tax credits, raise New Yorkers' electricity bills by hundreds of dollars annually, and lead to job losses, cratering the state's clean energy economy.
The House bill, in just decimating the clean energy credits, would raise your costs, whether you're a homeowner or a small business, for energy. It would cause a loss of 20,000 jobs in New York State to start with, and many other ancillary jobs, and would give China a user advantage. That is not big and beautiful. That's big, but it's ugly.
Schumer noted the bill also slashes food assistance and makes the deepest cut to Medicaid in history. At his office in Albany on Wednesday, Capital Region Congressman Paul Tonko said along with cuts to Medicaid and Medicare, more than 26,000 people in the 20th District could lose their health care if the Senate approves the package.
Each of us as members of that committee on the Democratic side searched out and received plentiful amounts of anecdotal evidence of what it would mean. Individuals in wheelchairs, individuals who, you know, we're talking about children to the disabled, to the senior, most senior amongst us. Across the demographics, there were people expressing their need to have these dollars.
A member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees Medicaid spending, Tonko said Republicans rebuked attempts by Democrats to mitigate hundreds of billions of dollars of cuts to the program.
For them, it was this document that was going to be grand and big and beautiful and accomplish all these cuts and reduce government. But what you're doing is undoing access to health care coverage. You're undoing access to food assistance programs. And, you know, I think there's a call here for a bipartisan strategy. There was no effort made by the majority to reach across the aisle and work with Democrats to come up with a fair and acceptable plan.
Responding to a request for comment, 17th District Republican Congressman Mike Lawler's office emailed a statement that says, in part, Tonko is spreading blatant falsehoods about the House reconciliation bill, which does nothing to cut Medicare. Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, a Democrat from the 1st District, says he's hopeful senators will come to a different conclusion than those in the House, which passed its version of the bill earlier this month.
Some of that might be buffered by the fact that many of them might not be in a reelect cycle over there, so that will give them greater opportunity for deliberation. I think many of them have already said that this proposal that's coming from the House Republicans has very little chance of passing the U.S. Senate. And I think that it's very important to understand that if you're a Republican senator from Missouri, one out of three people in your state derives a Medicaid benefit. In West Virginia, I think it's closer to 40%, and they have Republican senators.
In a statement, a spokesperson for North Country, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of the 21st District, says there are no cuts to Medicaid, and the fact is that the bill actually increases Medicaid by eliminating billions in waste, fraud, and abuse.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Developers are attempting to revive two previously abandoned natural gas supply pipelines in New York. The move comes as the Trump administration appears to be using its influence to try and push fossil fuel projects forward, even in states that once blocked them. Jung Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network with more.
The plans for the pipelines were abandoned after New York refused to okay the permits for them several years ago out of concern that they would pollute New York's waterways and hamper the state's climate sustainability goals. But Williams, a natural gas company based in Oklahoma, said on Thursday that it's planning to file paperwork for the Constitution Pipeline and the Northeast Supply Enhancement Project. The reversal comes on the heels of talks between President Donald Trump and Governor Kathy Hochul, in which Hochul lobbied Trump to undo a stop work order on a massive wind project off the coast of Long Island. Trump did. But the White House has said Hochul signaled a willingness to pipelines while conducting those negotiations. On Thursday, Hochul said new energy projects, including pipelines, could have cost-saving benefits for New Yorkers.
Families in every corner of our state are suffering from high bills for groceries and utilities. I have to look at this in a different lens and will continue being committed to our climate goals. I believe in them, but also the realization that we need to be more open-minded and expansive.
Environmental advocates, meanwhile, see a straight line between the negotiations over offshore wind and the comeback of the pipeline projects. Alex Beecham is the Northeast Region Director for Food and Water Watch.
From Williams's perspective, clearly they saw that Trump and Hochul have talked and saw the Trump administration sort of declaring that Hochul will now build pipelines and then decided to revive both these long dead frack natural gas pipelines. So yes, unquestionably, it's about those talks.
Hochul said the state will work on new energy projects that meet the legal requirements of New York law. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Senator Liz Krueger. We started our conversation by speaking about the medical aid in dying legislation that's already passed the State Assembly and whether she thinks the Senate legislation, which she co-sponsored, will pass.
I am cautiously optimistic that it will pass. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill, have been forever. So I definitely want it to pass. The Assembly did pass it. We've conferenced it. While we didn't do a head count, how many yes and no in the conference, I came away from the conference feeling we have the votes. And even people who said, I need to vote no, this can't be a yes for me, they weren't saying the world ends if you bring it to the floor. They were just saying, I understand the issues. I understand people who are on the other side of the debate, but I just have to be a no. And so it was an incredibly important and respectful conference about very serious issues. And so I am pretty optimistic that we're going to be able to get it to the floor. Of course, we have this problem of the time clock of when session ends and the fact that the budget went on so long, 40 days late, that it really limited the amount of time we now have to get bills done. Again, I think this year is going to be a little different than other years because I suspect we will be back after the summer to deal with budget crises created by the federal government. But when we're back, it means we have more opportunity to move legislation that we didn't get to, but I'm going to stay cautiously optimistic we get this bill done before we leave town on June 12th or 13th.
You know, you've supported a lot of environmental legislation and partnered with your colleagues in the Assembly on some. The New York State Senate has passed, your house, the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. It goes after plastic packaging. It's now headed to the Assembly. It's always miffed me on the environmental legislation when both houses are led by Democrats and one house always seems not to approve it.
Well, the fact is this is an enormous bill with enormously complicated different issues in it because it's covering packaging for so many different categories of business. And so Pete Harkam, the sponsor of the bill, has done an amazing job, literally over a five-year period, trying to meet with everyone from every industry, talk through their concerns, work with everyone in the environmental world, and come up with a bill that we believe, because we passed it last night overwhelmingly, we believe gets us where we need to go. Because the fact is, the amount of damage being done by packaging that is filled with forever chemicals or filled with microplastics has such damaging impacts on the bigger picture environment, on our solid waste management crisis, which is spreading throughout the state, and with our fundamental health problems. Is the evidence is so overwhelming that we have to get something done. And Europe is way ahead of us, and they're doing it, and the world didn't end. They're doing it. There was an interesting debate last night involving hours of back and forth where Pete Harkam did amazing, amazing work. Everybody can turn on the, you know, the channel and watch it if they want to. And the fact is, he had answers for every concern. He had examples of how these solutions are working in various parts of the country already or various parts of the world. I don't know if the assembly will take it up. I don't know if the governor will sign it. But it was a huge win for New York that we passed it on the Senate last night and pushed the ball forward in this very, very important area.
We're speaking with New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat. I want to talk about involuntary commitment. I'm imagining you're a bit disappointed by this. New York State has made it easier to involuntarily hospitalize people with severe mental illness.
So it's not that I'm disappointed with that sentence, and it's not even that I'm so disappointed with the action that was taken. But here's the thing. I represent Manhattan. We have more of these kinds of unexplained violent incidents on the streets and subways by severely mentally ill people who aren't getting any kinds of mental health care, aren't getting any kinds of help, and do lash out sometimes. Now, of course, mentally ill homeless people are still more likely to be victims than assaulters, but when there are assaults, they're bad, and they're in my district. The police pick up people every day. They take them to XYZ emergency room. Those emergency rooms have them spend maybe 3-6 hours, maybe 3 days, and then release them back to the streets. It accomplishes nothing. So what I continue to beg the governor for during the budget negotiations, and frankly, overall failed, was a commitment that if you bring someone into a hospital ER or a three-day stay, you can't discharge them back to the streets. You can only discharge them if you have an appropriate setting to bring them to. A psychiatric hospital for longer care, a supportive housing residence with intensive psychiatric services on location, a family member who is willing to say, yes, they'll stay with us and we'll get them the care. But to discharge back to the streets is no win at all.
Liz Krueger, Democratic Senator from New York, tell us about the New York Protect Act.
This is a bill to try to protect not-for-profit organizations who may be losing their federal nonprofit status because the president decides to pull it for political reasons or writes one of his weird executive orders pulling everybody in certain categories, claiming they're un-American or whatever. You know, pick a day that he's doing something like this and trying to protect their having continued not-for-profit status in the state of New York. So this is basically a bill that says if the feds have pulled your 501c3, which defines you as a nonprofit, for political reasons as opposed to you did something bad reasons, then you will still have the right to keep your nonprofit status here in New York and keep the rights and privileges of a not-for-profit, including exemption from state and local taxes. We unfortunately can't protect them from owing federal taxes if they lose their federal 501c3, but I think we can do a lot to protect their ongoing rights to be a not-for-profit, an educational institution, a university, a hospital, a small not-for-profit social service agency who maybe didn't turn someone into ICE one day, et cetera, et cetera, and that they shouldn't lose their state status as a not-for-profit corporation just because someone at the federal level decided to use their power, conceivably unconstitutionally, to pull their status as a not-for-profit. So I'm hoping I can move that bill because it's just common sense, I think.
That's New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Technology Enterprise Corporation is set to host its 8th annual Population Health Innovation Summit. It's going to be at the Capitol Center in Albany on Thursday, June 5th. It's from 8:30 to 4:30. Don't worry, there'll be a cocktail reception afterwards. And joining us to talk about it is NYSTEC CEO Kevin Owens. Mr. Owens, thanks so much for joining us on the Legislative Gazette this week.
No, of course. Thanks, David, for having me. I'm anxious to talk about our Population Health Summit.
Well, obviously, climate change is the subject. You know, if we don't have a healthy earth, we can't live here. So,
of course,
talk a little bit more about maybe some of the highlights, some of the people we'll be hearing from coming up at the summit next week.
Sure. So next week, as you mentioned, it's our 8th run at this. And each year we've picked a new topic that we think is really relevant to population health and timely. And as you mentioned, this year we're looking at climate change and how that impacts our health overall. And I think for a number of years, we've been hearing how really your overall environment, whether it's food, housing, just the kind of the environment in general, the weather, the natural disasters, what is resident in the communities that you live and work in, really impacts health overall. And really this year with the intersection of climate change, environmental sustainability, and human health, it's really never been more urgent or more apparent. You know, with these extreme weather events and shifts in disease patterns, disruptions to air and food, water quality, et cetera, these are things that are directly or indirectly affecting health outcomes, particularly in vulnerable populations. And we look to bring together experts to talk on these topics. Our keynote speaker this year is a woman by the name of Sherry Goodman. She was appointed as the first Pentagon Chief Environmental Officer, sustainability and national security expert, and she also has a book, The Threat Multiplier. So she is, a renowned expert in the field. Another individual that I always like to call out is we have Joe Pfeiffer, who's the former acting fire commissioner and first deputy commissioner of New York City Fire Department, FDNY, and he'll be speaking on a panel. And he was one of the first, he was the first fire chief at the World Trade Center attacks on 9/11 and has expert experience in managing extreme disasters and the impacts of those. Many people might be familiar. There was a documentary with a couple of French documentarians who were actually at his fire station the morning of 9/11. That's not what they were supposed to film about, but they ended up following, his battalion down to the World Trade Center site. He's a world-renowned expert and certainly something that we all connect with. We also have panels investing in future security, creating sustainable communities, powering our future, prepping for storm and responses and extreme weather, wildfires, tornadoes, et cetera, and how all those things kind of play into overall population health. So it's going to be a full day for sure, and we're looking forward to it.
Kevin Owens, CEO of NYSTEC, I feel like there's something hanging in the air here with your focus on climate change and the need, quite frankly, for more resources to be put to help mitigate climate change, when coming from Washington, D.C. is just the opposite approach, some climate change denial, not to mention all sorts of cutting of programs that affect food and housing. So I'm wondering, I'm guessing the experts at your summit are aware of this and will maybe be tailoring their speeches for how to do more with less.
I think yes. I think definitely we're in a time where there may be cutbacks to some of these initiatives that we might be talking about. But I think that's also one of the purposes for having our Population Health Innovation Summit. We look for, we don't always look necessarily for the big ideas. Sometimes we look for the small ideas and creating those connections with that, you know, perhaps a project that's going on within an individual community that might be scalable, that might not take, you know, as big an investment as one might think, or some groundwork has already been done and how to leverage that to make the best out of it if you decide to, you know, leverage that type of, whether it's technology, whether it's approach, whether it's process, to kind of implement something around population health within your own, perhaps smaller community. But yes, I think, you know, some of the bigger initiatives I think people are concerned about, but I think, again, I think coming together as communities is really the important term, important part in seeing where we can help each other, as I said, sometimes in the smaller areas and maybe not the big projects.
Probably should have began with this question, but tell us more about New York State Technology Enterprise Corporation. I'm guessing an event like this is part of your overall mission.
Yes. I mean, I really like to think that this is our signature event that we do each year, but we do a number of things within the communities. You know, we are I think one thing that's unique is Nice Tech is a nonprofit technology consulting company. We have been in existence since 1996, so we're going to be turning 30 next year. And we partner with the New York State agencies, state and local governments, even a little bit of federal work, and on complex, predominantly technology strategies and solutions. But, you know, it's really kind of almost impossible to separate people, process, and technology in anything that you do right now. And we like to consider the work that we do impactful to perhaps small groups of New Yorkers, larger groups of New Yorkers, depending on the, you know, the size and scope of the technology that we're trying to implement. We like to stay very active in the communities across New York State and support other nonprofits and community organizations. And I think one of the things I like to do is I give back from a nonprofit perspective is think about how I inspire and enable the workforce of tomorrow. So whether it's STEM classes for high school students or whether it's working with young innovators or entrepreneurs and teaching them how to scale a business and put something out into the market. And that kind of complements, I guess, our community aspect of the company that we run.
Can folks, you know, groups and professionals that could benefit from your services, how would they get in touch if they can't be at the summit?
Sure. Well, you know, we are present on the web, of course. And, you know, they can visit nicetech.com, which is N-Y-S-T-E-C. You know, for the population health, there is an events tab. This is free and open to the public. So people can register online to come to the summit next week, as well as our website would explain how to get in touch with us, how to engage with us, the services that we offer, et cetera.
Is there a major innovation that you can point to that we might be seeing on the horizon?
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, you know, last year our Population Health Innovation Summit was on AI. I think that is, you know, obviously the new shiny toy that everyone's talking about. And I do think that it will be, you know, it will be impactful to all of us over the next years, perhaps even quicker than maybe we anticipate or perhaps even are ready for. But, you know, AI is exciting. And I think as a technology firm, we're investing in that and seeing how we can leverage that to make, you know, better decisions and better outcomes for people in the healthcare space and certainly other lines of business as well.
How did you come to be the CEO at Nice Tech?
Well, I've been with NYSTEC about 15 years now. So I was a consultant. So I've been a technology consultant for just about 25 years now. Joined the firm because I wanted to kind of get off the road. We have offices across the state, but my travel is limited around that to, you know, Albany, New York City, and we're based in Rome, New York. And I've been CEO for about 5 years now, so kind of grew up in the company a little bit. And when my predecessor left, I took over from him.
He is Kevin Owens, the CEO of NYSTEC, New York State Technology Enterprise Corporation. We've been talking about their summit that's coming up on climate change, the theme this year. It's Thursday, June 5th from 8:30 to 4:30 at the Capitol Center in Albany. And if you want to find out more, just head to NYSTEC, NYSTEC.com. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on the Legislative Gazette this week.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad we had this time to talk.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2522. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.